But I wanted to thank you for praying for us as we led the church weekend at St James's Road the weekend before that, before we went away. We had a fantastic time with them. God was really present. And what we prepared was really what they needed, which is always great, isn't it, when we see the Holy Spirit at work like that. The Holy Spirit has been at work like that in this service too. As you'll see when I preach, Audrey's prayers already echo the things that I'm going to bring out in this sermon. So let's start. We're going to be looking at our fourth episode in our sermon series of the Bells Challenge. I hope that this has been challenging you to think a bit differently about how we can be missional people in Croxley and beyond. I hope that following John's sermon last week that you've been challenged to find a place to listen to God this week. We're going to look a little bit further this week. And this week it is about learning your crowd and learning Jesus. Which sounds a funny thing to say, doesn't it? But let's see how it unfolds. I wonder what your night vision is like. Mine is terrible, absolutely terrible. If we go for a walk somewhere in the dark, you know, sometimes you walk back from the pub late at night in the Lake District on holiday and there's not much natural light, and I am dreadful at trying to find my way in the dark. But being in the dark has captured our imagination, hasn't it, this last few weeks? I wonder what it is about this story of these boys that have been caught in this cave, which has really, really swept us up, because it has, hasn't it? It's been one of these stories which has grabbed everybody in the news. It has sort of reminiscence of those miners that got stuck down the mine. Do you remember that a few years ago in South America? And I was just thinking about, well, what is it about this story which really grabs us, which really captures our imagination? And I suppose to start with, it is the fact that they were all children. And yet, you know, we can remain unmoved by the stories of thousands of children suffering in war-torn places around this planet, suffering in refugee camps, literally across the water in Calais. So it's not just the fact that they were children, is it? It may be that it was the football link all tied in with the World Cup. That meant that it stayed on our news cycle. Who knows what causes people to make decisions at that kind of level. But I wonder, really, if it taps into something a lot more basic with us. I wonder if it taps into our imagination, because we basically all have a residual fear of the dark, don't we? And the thought of being stuck in a really, really dark place, and there is nothing darker than a cave, for 2 weeks, would frighten most of us, wouldn't it? That would be uncomfortable, to say the least. And there is something about the dark that reaches a very primeval fear in each one of us, really, doesn't it? We go to great lengths to eliminate the dark from our lives. We fill our homes with electric lighting. We don't walk into rooms in the dark, do we? For fear we might trip over something. We give our children night lights to make sure that they're not frightened at night in the dark, to help them sleep. We light our streets in some places in the world. I know we don't do it for all night here in Croxley, and that was a great shock to me. You know, when we first moved here, and I was still travelling to Spurgeon's College once a week to do my Masters, and I had to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning to walk to the station to get there. It was pitch dark. I'd never been anywhere where the streetlights don't stay on throughout the night. But in most places in the world, we have an abundance of light, don't we? 24 hours. And our big cities, of course, glow constantly. We can see that from pictures from space, can't we, about how much light there is in all of our cities. And so much so, we are surrounded by light so much of the time that most of us, myself included, have lost the ability to actually look at the sky. Because we don't see it how our ancestors saw it. We've got so much light pollution now that we don't look into the sky and see the stars in the same way that our grandparents did. And we've lost that ability to read what's there and where the planets are, haven't we? And of course, it's not just physical darkness that we're afraid of. The Bible is full of metaphors for darkness and light that can lead us to a very real fear of all that is not part of the glorious world of light. We see sin as the dark side of our nature, and we live, don't we, in that dualistic way of seeing the world by urging ourselves to stay in the light, to avoid the darkness of sin at all costs, to fear the dark side of our world and our own makeup. And yet, good things happen in the dark, don't they? Out of the darkness of the first days of creation comes light and all the wonderful things that we see in its rays. New life forms in the darkness of the womb or the soil, and resurrection happens in the darkness of a sealed tomb in a cave. In fact, our very health depends on having periods of dark where we will sleep. If we miss out on that, our body gets out of sync. We need darkness as well as light. And I wonder what our relationship with darkness should be. Well, one of the things I love about going on holiday is that I get to read lots of books. And I read 3 novels and 1 theology book while I was away. And this was the book I read. It's by an author that I often bring to you as someone who's good to read. And she didn't disappoint. It is a great book. And this book is called Learning to Walk in the Dark. And it's where she explores that whole thing of we've come to associate darkness with bad things, and yet actually it is a place where we can meet with God. I highly commend this book to you. It will change the way you think about how and where you might have your quiet times, about where you might look for God in this world. And in Acts 17, Paul enters a place that he may well have described as dark in a spiritual sense, doesn't he? He goes to Athens. He's actually waiting in Athens for his friends to join him. And Luke tells us that he's actually distressed by what he saw in Athens while he waited for his missionary partners to join him. And in the blazing light of the Greek sunshine, and for any of us that have been there, and we were fortunate enough to go there a couple of years ago, there is blazing light on this hill where there are still the ruins of where Paul preached this sermon. You can go and stand and walk around it. You have to do a little climb, but you can go and walk around this little place where Paul held these people in his gaze. But Paul walks round in this blazing sunshine and sees the darkness of idols. And everywhere he looks, there is another deity or god adding to the spiritual darkness of the people of Athens. And after a life brought up in a monotheistic tradition, as he was in Judaism, the threat of death was hanging over his people if they were to succumb to this kind of darkness, the worship of idols. And so here he is, plunged into the darkness of a society where literally any god goes. And yet what we learn about Paul in Athens is that although he is distressed by what he sees, he is not frightened by the spiritual darkness around him. He doesn't hide away with his Christian friends to pray against the evil influences at work in Athens. Far from it, he walks around the city, soaking in the culture he finds himself in and realizing that the darkness that surrounds him is actually the Athenians' attempt to find the light. I wonder what we feel when we look into the darkness of our own modern culture. I wonder how we respond when we observe the many idols that our society relies upon for health and wealth and happiness. And we may not have statues everywhere to the gods of love and fertility and war, but take a look on our screens, our magazines, our shops, and any foreign visitor can see what it is we are looking for. Our bodies have become an idol to be indulged with the latest beauty treatment or surgery. The products we buy tell us that outer appearance is all that counts because we are worth it. Our cars tell us that if we just have the right one in the garage, we will be able to be break free from being ordinary. And our computer games and our politics tell us that we still, as a society, worship at the feet of the idol of the god of war. So how do we respond to this darkness? How do we grapple with it? Do we hide away from it? Do we take refuge in our ever tighter network of church friends and hope to goodness that the other stuff will go away? Do we even know what our own culture looks like? When was the last time we walked around trying to understand where our neighbours live in the real world outside the church? Well, Paul did not shy away from a culture that he found distressing. He got to know it, he walked around it, and he tried to understand it. How did he do that? How was he not afraid of the dark? Well, I think one of the key things Paul does is that he realizes that darkness is not dark to God. If you have ever been outside in the dark, you will realise that it doesn't actually stay very dark for very long, does it? If you're away from our city skies and the light pollution that we have here, the real sky moves and changes all night, lit up by the light set in place billions of years ago. The majesty of the created heavens means that there is always light, even in the darkest nights. And whilst we've inherited a narrative of darkness from the Bible that tells us that we should be people of the light, we also know that to God, darkness isn't dark at all. Psalm 139 says this: "If I say, surely the darkness will hide me and the light become night around me, even the darkness will not be dark to you. The night will shine like the day, for darkness is as light to you." So if even the darkness of night is as light to God, surely the darkness of our own culture and its failings and sinfulness is no match for God. Paul knows this as he walks around this strange and confused city. He realizes that even if he can't understand the nature of the people he's brushing up against in the market, that there is nothing hidden or dark about them to God. In fact, their very darkness becomes the key for understanding how to talk to them. And Paul's address to the people of Athens is often held up as an exemplar for how to do cross-cultural mission. My first ever lecture at Spurgeon's about cross-cultural mission began with this passage in Acts. And even though Paul feels completely out of his depth, and conveniently for us, to make us feel better, the people he's talking to accuse him of being an utter babbler, which is really encouraging, isn't it, for us? He's confident that even the dark of his current experience is a place where he will be able to start with who they are and where they are. And he knows that no society are too lost in the dark for God to be able to know them and to love them. And so he stands in the confidence of that. See how our hymns have linked in this morning. And joins them where they are to lead them out into the light. Now, the divers who so bravely rescued those small boys didn't shout instructions from the safety of a well-lit surface, did they? The whole point of this rescue was that they went down into the darkness of the cave. They went through that water-filled tunnel to find them, to teach them what to do, and to bring them out. And Paul is doing exactly the same thing with the Athenians. He knows that God can reach them, and so he learns his crowd in the light of that revelation. Now, it can be very frightening and disconcerting to step out of all the certainty and security that life in the light of our church network gives us. But the truth is that there are thousands of people living in a darkness that are seen by God and who need people to get into that dark place with them and to walk out with them. And just as Paul started with where the Athenians seemed to be searching, their idol to an unknown God, revealing all their insecurities about the type of worship they thought was keeping them safe and protected. It is an absolute lesson, isn't it, in hedging your bets, in having this idol to an unknown God. So our friends and neighbours are hedging their bets in the darkness. They are hedging their bets with the things that make them feel insecure and anxious. And we have a better story to tell them than the one that they get from the media or society. But if we are absent from those places, how are they going to hear it? Well, maybe this is where we hit a bit of a dark patch of our own. You see, Paul is able to speak into their darkness with the light of the good news of Jesus, not because he had clever answers or handy preaching gimmicks. We know that they accused him of babbling, so it doesn't sound like he was doing a fantastic job of just winning them over with his oratory skills. He could actually speak into their lives because he had a first-hand knowledge of who it was he wanted to introduce them to. He wasn't sharing a philosophy or the latest ideas, as they called it. He was sharing a God with whom he had an intimate relationship. And yes, he was clever enough to quote one of their top 10 poems when he said, "For in him we live and move and have our being," as some of your poets have said, "We are his offspring." That was a stroke of genius to link into their culture by using something that was so much on the lips of those Athenians. But it wasn't just a line, was it? It was his experience. And Paul knows Jesus well enough for him to shine into their darkness. And herein lies the rub for us. We can kid ourselves that we are children of the light as long as we like. But if we don't immerse ourselves in God and in our own culture, we are but frightened children gathering around a camping torch in the dark. If we are really children of the light, we should be so full of who God is and what he has done for us that it literally shines out of us wherever we are. And knowing that God is with us wherever, and that no dark place is really dark to him, should give us the courage to step out of our safe churchly huddle and get into the places where darkness seems to be winning. There's a Christian singer-songwriter that we really like, a Canadian guy called Bruce Cockburn, and he sings a line about punching at the darkness until it bleeds daylight. It's a very aggressive line, isn't it? But some of the situations we might face if we are prepared to step out may well require a bit of punching. There are dark things at work in our world which are scary and unpredictable. And if we, the children of light, are not engaged with them, how are they ever going to bleed daylight? The same God who walked around Athens with Paul will walk around Croxley or Watford or wherever it is we find ourselves with us. That same God steps into the dark places of our lives, steps into the dark places at work and study, our pubs and clubs, our homes, our families, and says, "Let there be light." Now, we have a new challenge this week. It is a challenge to know Jesus better. And that is always a good challenge to have. But I want to add something to this challenge this week. I want to challenge us to get to know Jesus better outside the four walls of this church. I want us to be the sort of people that find Jesus and get to know him in the scary places and the challenging places. I want to dare you to look for Jesus in the places in your life that you find the most difficult. The places that feel dark to you. The places you think he wouldn't know about. So that actually we can discover that he is always there before us, always bringing light. If we really want to discover that God is light, then we need to do the same thing as we need to do if we want to actually see the lights in the sky at night. We need to go to the dark places. Are we ready to do it? I hope so. Amen.